In some instances, a prophet is a person regarded as an inspired teacher or proclaimer of the will of God. The prophets from the Jewish and Christian scriptures are sometimes described as struggling with their own relationship with God, such as Jonah, who is swallowed by a whale while running away from God's call. And often the prophets are depicted as carrying a message to people who do not necessarily want to listen, as in the story of Noah and the flood. More recent prophets may be identified as a person who advocates for or speaks in a visionary way about a new belief, cause, or theory. Somewhat modern-day prophets might be people like Sojourner Truth, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Gandhi, King, Mother Teresa, and much more recently, West Coast religious educator Aisha Hauser, who asked the question about white supremacy culture 2 years ago in our denomination. The Reverend Ashley Horan, justice minister in Minnesota, who made it possible for several of us clergy to get to Standing Rock. Reverend Dr. Rebecca Parker, who was here on Celebration Sunday. And Reverend Leon Dunkley, who preached at the installation service. Now, one doesn't usually name themselves a prophet, and in many cases, their prophetic words or deeds are not recognized as such in the moment that they are shared. Sometimes they are ridiculed or resisted. The prophet, however, presses on, and eventually folks may realize what a good idea it is to stop supporting businesses and organizations that uphold armed militias like Shell, that benefit from child labor like Hershey's, Nestle, and Mars, that wreak environmental havoc like Exxon, that have racist hiring practices like Walmart, or homophobic policies and practices like Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby. And sometimes, suddenly, though prophets have been calling our attention for decades to something terrible, folks will suddenly realize, oh, you know, the U.S. Border Patrol is doing some terrible things to people at the border. Maybe it's time we start doing something to stop them.
So when Reverend Wendy and Reverend Lynn asked me to write this reflection, they said, you could have chosen to do hundreds of other things, and yet you chose to interpret for immigrants. Why? There are so many reasons. Maybe it's because I've gotten to know a lot of children and youth both here and in Guatemala over the past 15 years of UU service trips that this church has supported. Maybe it's the trip that we took as a service trip with the youth and adults to Tucson last year. Thank you. Last year, to study immigration issues at our southern border. Or maybe it was the shock of meeting several dozen men and women last summer at the Albany County Jail when 321 souls were sent here after being detained at our southern border and all of the prisons there were full, so they started farming them out to other jails across the country. Or maybe it was when we saw news stories of children being taken from their parents and about babies being put into cages. Or maybe it was when, after speaking about these horrors to a friend of mine, she shrugged and said, well, you know, they brought it on themselves. After all, they are illegals. I think it was that casual, nonchalant shrug that finally tipped me over the edge. One of my favorite quotes is by Unitarian Theodore Parker. I know a lot of you know it, but I'm going to read it for you in case you don't. I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice. I kept thinking to myself, I know I am one person. I can't do everything, but I cannot sit here and do nothing. My Unitarian Universalist faith calls me to be a person who bends that arc towards justice even if by an infinitesimal amount. I've been really fortunate in my life. I've been able to travel and study a lot in Mexico and in Guatemala, and I've become a speaker of Spanish. Because of that, I found myself in the position to be able to volunteer as an interpreter. First, I worked for a couple of years with the Legal Project, which is a consortium of lawyers based at SUNY Albany who provide pro bono legal assistance to people who are trying to navigate our Byzantine immigration process. Basically, I sit with lawyer and client, and I translate as our client tells her story, the one that pushed her from her home to come thousands of miles to the U.S. I listen, and I translate. The attorney sits at my side and can't understand a word of what she says. He doesn't have any Spanish vocabulary, much less words like fear, threat, extortion, assault, kidnapping, rape, murder. The words flow to me, and I hold them, a vessel, before passing them on to the attorney. One woman I met last summer was 18. She was dry-eyed as she spoke of horrors she fled when she was pushed from her home and to our border. Her journey took weeks. She was apprehended within hours of crossing. She had a cleft lip and a speech impediment. She said, "Once I got to the border, La Migra picked me up. They started making fun of me, saying I was ugly and stupid, that I was an incomprehensible imbecile because of the way I talked." La Migra, in case you don't know, is ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. I'm a woman of Unitarian Universalist faith. My faith calls me to affirm that every person has inherent worth and dignity. Hearing her story, her suffering, her courage, and then to hear about this final insult that came at the hands of our U.S. officials, that hit hard. I know this isn't about me, but I felt so deeply for her that she had come all this way, facing untold horrors, seeking asylum, seeking sanctuary, safety, maybe a little comfort, and then to learn that our officials treated her without respect, without dignity, without basic human decency? My shoulders drop, and I whispered, "Lo siento mucho. I'm so sorry." I'm not supposed to add anything when I translate. I'm just supposed to translate what she says. But how can I stay silent? I have to sit for a moment and focus on my breathing. I'm not supposed to cry either. So I count to 10. When the attorney finally says to me, "What'd she say?" I translate for him. His shoulders drop. "I'm so sorry," he says to her. Then we started hearing about babies being torn from their parents, about children being put into cages. I felt disbelief and horror as I watched the news. This could not possibly be happening. I kept wondering, if these were my kids, they're all our kids. I felt compelled to go to the jails, to bear witness, and to say to those who casually shrugged their shoulders, "This atrocity is real, and if you sit there and you shrug, you are complicit." The first day I was in Texas, I worked with a group of about 10 lawyers and 7 interpreters. We assisted over 300 people. Over and over and over, we heard shock and pain from the men who thought they were leaving home to come to something better, to come to the U.S., this beacon of freedom. "We had so much hope," they told us. And then they took our kids. Thankfully, when I met the fathers, they had been reunited with their sons, albeit in a prison. The children were everywhere in the jail, writing on chalkboards, reading books, bonking each other in the head with toys, some as young as 22 months, and some as old as 17. Never far from their fathers, they sat quietly, a hand settled on a back, a head resting gently on a shoulder. The father spoke to us. Of their anguish of being separated for days or weeks or months on end. No wonder they didn't want to be physically out of touch from each other. Their eyes were full of hurt and disbelief. I'm so sorry, I say. Not all of us are like that. They say they know, and they appreciate what we are doing. They appreciate our kindness. They say, gracias, gracias, and bendiciones a ustedes, blessings to you. And all I can feel is shame that I live in a land where we would treat people so. I talked to two men who wanted to sign their deportation orders and go home. They told me their stories and they sobbed. These are macho men, and they sobbed. They told me again about the anguish of having their children taken from them and not knowing where they were or to be able to talk to them for weeks. They told me about the humiliation and fear of being manacled and shackled. One said, I am not a criminal. I have never committed a crime. I am a hard worker. I am poor. My family is starving. I took a chance and I came here. Now, I just want to go back home. If a client wants to leave, I have to read them deportation advisals. They will not be permitted to apply for a visa for 5 years. Upon hearing this, the man said, "That is fine with me. I am not returning. I may have only tortillas and salt to eat for the rest of my life, but I am never coming back to this godforsaken country." Make no mistake, the U.S. Border Patrol is still separating children from their parents. Daughters are taken from their fathers, and sons are taken from their mothers because there are very few places that can house mixed gender. I do plan to return this summer. We'd love to have company. If you are a lawyer or an interpreter, perhaps you'd like to join me. Or you can support the UU College of Social Justice, or RAICES, the Refugee Immigration Center for Education and Legal Services. When I talked to their director, he said they run on a shoestring budget and they absolutely cannot function without volunteer power. If you want to make a difference locally, reach out to the Legal Project to offer your support there. All of us can call and or write our elected officials to demand an end to these cruel and inhumane policies and to reform our broken and inept immigration system. You can talk with me after the service. I can share contacts and information. Together, we can bend that arc just even a little bit closer to justice.
The Reverend Brian Ferguson is one of our colleagues and dear friends. We met Brian in seminary and connected over conversations about class and racial justice, raising kids, and the strange life in congregations. Brian has a dry sense of humor and a lovely Scottish accent that reminds me of my maternal grandfather. Last year, when Brian and Wendy and I were participating in a minister's study group on dismantling white supremacy, he shared a story about when he and the congregation he serves in Texas had a chance to learn about the power of following and of showing up when asked by community partners. We share this story with his permission. Their congregation was planning to participate in the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day parade. Reverend Brian asked the social justice chair if she would check with the organizers to see if there was any way that they could support the organizers' parade. She knew the organizers and said she would check back with him at the board meeting, which was a couple of weeks before the parade. At the next board meeting, that was just before the parade, she reported that they had been asked to bring a sheet cake. Then, during the board meeting, a discussion ensued about how they could do so much better than sheet cake. Maybe a selection of pies, a variety of desserts, since so many of us love to bake. After a couple of minutes of this conversation, Reverend Brian interjected, "Why are we not bringing what they asked?" His inner voice was saying, "Just bring the bloody sheet cake." A few of the board members understood what his outer voice was saying, and it was agreed that they would bring the cake. But some board members were disappointed and felt a little thwarted. At the MLK Junior Day Parade, there was a rally beforehand. Brian was present, and just before the rally, one of the organizers, an African-American city council member, approached him, and the conversation went something like this. "You're the pastor of the San Marcos Unitarian Universalist Fellowship?" "Yes, I am. I'm Brian Ferguson. Pleased to meet you." "I'm Councilmember Chris Jones. I want to thank your church members for bringing the sheet cake." "You're welcome. We're happy to support in any way that's helpful. We appreciate it." After a pause, the council member said, "Would you be willing to give the benediction at the end of the rally?" "Of course, I would be honored," Brian said, "and thank you for asking." Brian was the only white person who had been asked to speak at the rally. He doesn't know if the sheet cake was a test, but something about the way the conversation had gone with Mr. Jones felt that way. He reflected on how many times white folks try to lead rather than doing what is asked by people of color. To be good community partners, sometimes we may lead, other times we must follow. This begins with listening. Really listening, and then just bring the bloody sheet cake. Each of us has a unique set of gifts, a unique set of interests, experience, and connections. Each one of us has something to offer. What will you do with your one wild and precious life? Inspired by the prophetic courage of Harriet Tubman, the prophetic nonviolence of Gandhi, the prophetic creativity of Frida Kahlo, the prophetic insistence of transgender, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and queer folks who rose up at Stonewall, the prophetic music of Pete Seeger, the prophetic organizing of Reverend William Barber, the prophetic revolutionary love of Valerie Kaur, the prophetic courage of water protectors, the prophetic words and deeds of ordinary folks answering the call of extraordinary love. May we be brave enough to follow, to create justice, and to live with compassion. May it be so.